Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So we've got Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins in the main event tonight against Bobby Lashley and Big E. And Bobby Lashley and Big E had to coexist, that just vile, nasty C word, as Big E put it. How do you grade their coexisting? And Javier, what do you take from the way they portrayed, in particular, Lashley tonight, more in a babyface role? Is this circumstantial? Were you anticipating that maybe MVP would get involved and, you know, Lashley would be a heel? Or is this framing Lashley going into day one as on the verge of being a babyface, or at least more sympathetic than KO and Seth, and that's all this is for?
Sympathetic is definitely what I was thinking about when I was actually watching that. It didn't really feel like it was like a full-blown face turn, but I think it's mainly to be, you know, sympathetic compared to the rest of the people involved, where Rollins and KO are the scumbags. And at least he's still a heel, but he's got an honorable side, so you know, there's a little bit more to him in that. And I think it does open the door if they do want to turn him babyface, you know, during this whole thing. I don't think so, because I think this is mainly the two of them are going to, you know, take out their two challengers, and then eventually they're going to, you know, go at it themselves, just with a little bit more like honor at stake, as opposed to, you know, being scumbags.
Yeah. So just expanding on that, what are the odds Lashley does as we move into 2022, that he is a babyface? Like, what are the odds of them just deciding to do that? And I ask that in the context of those sort of inspirational videos they showed of Lashley's athletic background and hard work, and also that he does sort of have an out at every turn for MVP and what MVP is doing and saying, I'm not asking him to help. Now, that doesn't mean he's telling the truth, but if they wanted to turn a babyface officially, I mean, they've laid that out. It could be done and it would make sense, and I think fans would embrace it. But what are the odds that what we're seeing is more just trying to kind of even out and add a little more mystery than having Big E against three heels?
Yeah, I think it really is add a little bit more mystery because it's the WWE and it's kind of how they do things. Because, I mean, you know, you could do where he's just like a badass and he's still like, you know, Scott is surly and he's all about the winning and that sort of stuff. You can do that, but that requires a more nuance than I think WWE usually uses. And I think it's more just like, you know, just we're going to make strange fellows now, but then it's going to be all in like, you know, sneak attack at Big E kind of stuff like coming out after that, because that's kind of what they do. I am open to being pleasantly surprised that they do something more, but I think that's ultimately where it heads.
All right, very good. What'd you think of how Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins came across in this show? I had noted at the top of my Raw report at pwtorch.com at the start of the show, I was curious to see if there was any sign of Kevin Owens being treated differently now that he's extended his deal with WWE. He's going to be staying there for the rest of his prime, probably. And I was like, are they going to protect him more? Will they give us a sign maybe he can win a world title? You know, should we enter next week in our preview discussions and writings, Javier, about that match and include Kevin Owens as even a candidate to win? I would say taking the pin, despite almost hitting a stunner, right before that, indicates, no, thank you for signing, Kevin Owens. We see you the same way. I don't want to overread it, but certainly we didn't get any conflicting information there.
Well, had today happened next week, I think that he's a shoo-in to win because, you know, that whole, you know.
Yes.
But the fact that we're 1 week away, I don't think that's happening. It seems like I find the dynamic between him and Seth Rollins really interesting. And some of the back and forth that they had today makes me think that, hey, why not just, you know, after this is all over, team them up. I had a little bit of vibe, you know, different, but sort of vibes of the Friends of Jericho thing that they did. KO did with Jericho. I think it could be fun, those two, like, you know, teaming up and working together. It seems like it'd be an interesting way if they decided to go that way.
Yeah. What'd you think of the performance of Big E tonight. As, I mean, because it's still, like, I'm still getting used to the idea that Big E, after all these years in New Day, is getting featured as a, like, long, you know, I guess sort of long-term at this point, or on the verge of it, a medium-term, going on long-term champion who it doesn't feel like it's just a transition or a phase or a Band-Aid or a bridge. It just kind of feels like they're giving it a try with him as champion. And he has – and it doesn't happen a ton in WWE. I mean, the reputation kind of is whatever level you come in at, you kind of stay there. You know, you might come in and tip towards the main event, but or you might tip away from the mid-card. You know, you might move down or up a little, but going from a long-term tag wrestler into his mid-30s now as a centerpiece world champion on Raw, I think we should, like – make note of that. Like, this is something people would not have predicted 6 months ago. How do you think Big E is winning Vince McMahon over week by week? Was this a good week for him? Has he found that zone of being a leader, a serious athlete, a world champion? They put that graphic on the screen tonight talking about his powerlifting history and his college football playing days, but also still showing us enough of that quirkiness that does kind of define him and doesn't strip him of who he is and who he's anxious to show he is. How do you feel about his performance tonight and a little bit more broadly?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of touched upon it a couple of weeks ago, and I don't think I got my point across when I was discussing it, because I think that Big E himself has done everything he can. His performances both in the ring and, you know, the promos that he's cutting, you know, he still keeps some of that. He's cut down some of the more crazy stuff. When it, you know, while still having it, just not doing the jokey stuff when it's not appropriate. I think he's found a good balance in that. The way he grows now at this point is how they book him, by giving him strong wins and you know, letting him hold the champion for a while. I think is you know, but at this point it's like out of his hands. It's how they want to actually use him at this point. But I've been, you know, I've been impressed, and it's pretty much his run is pretty much what I imagined a Big E run would have been, you know, way back when the rumors first started swirling that, you know, they might be interested in that. And, you know, when they first split him off, you know, because obviously they split him off because, you know, they wanted to see what he could do in the, you know, as a singles wrestler. So, yeah, I mean, I've been very pleased, and having another guy up there wrestling, you know, that's a capable champion is always good, so you don't always have the same people, you know, going back and forth.
Yeah, yep. All right, would you stick with Big E going into 2022, like, and see it as a shame? Or do you think, hey, he's been good, but we got to move it to somebody who really is a bigger star going into WrestleMania?
I mean, with the – because I think if all the people involved, particularly in this match, are pretty much on the same level for the most part. Yeah. I think Lashley might be, you know, but he's a heel. I'd keep it on Big E and continue building him to WrestleMania. Would be my thing, unless you have someone crazy coming in, but I doubt that's going to happen.
Right. Yes. All right. Very good. Let's pause, introduce the show and ourselves, and then we'll move on to phone calls and emails. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, December 20th, 2021. And I'm Wade Keller, the editor, founder, publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, and also the host of this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. Tomorrow on our Blue Logo Show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast flagship edition, Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks will join me to talk about a wide array of issues, WWE, AEW, and otherwise, maybe some year in review or looking ahead to the early 2022 phase, including Royal Rumble and WrestleMania season. If you have questions or comments on anything pro wrestling related, now's a good time to send that in for tomorrow's flagship, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com is our email. You can also use that email if you're listening to us live here after Raw. That email again is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. I'd love to hear from you and your thoughts on tonight's show. You can also call us and participate in the show. The number is 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. The other voice you hear so far on the show is Javier Machado. He is a PWTorch.com contributor, PWTorch VIP podcaster covering New Japan, and often participates at the end of our shows in a roundtable segment with our other co-hosts. Javier joins us for the full show again today. Javier, welcome.
Hey, Wade, thanks for having me on again.
Good to have you. I would like to politely ask anybody who calls or emails to not mention the Viking-Bears game. I'm going to throw that on. I've avoided spoilers so far, and I'd like to throw that on in the background while I do some edits tonight. So don't joke about it. Don't bring it up. Don't mess around. Let me have my fun on delay without
Let me make a football thing, because since everyone gets to join in on that.
Yeah.
I was a Dolphins fan until probably about the Sperano era, where I just lost all hope, stopped watching it. With Flores coming in, I liked the stuff I was seeing from him. And then so this season, I'm like, I'm going to start watching the Dolphins game, forget to record the first game. They win that. And then I start recording the games. And they lose every single game I recorded. And I'm like, you know what? Screw this. I deleted them all. You know, they suck again. And then they have, since I stopped recording them, they have won every single game I have not recorded. So, that's my Dolphin fan here in Florida.
Do you know the Lions version of that?
Which?
The Detroit Lions version of that is they lose every game they play, regardless of whether you watch it live or record it.
Yeah. I feel so bad for them. My fandom started when Barry Sanders was their running back, and he was my favorite running back for, like, ever, so.
Yeah. All right. I don't want to take any more digs at any more division rivals, and, my God, Aaron Rodgers is just ruining it for all of us, and the Vikings have stubbed their own toe enough, sometimes literally on field goals, to take themselves virtually out of the playoffs already, which is a bummer, but it's the Bears, and I have a lot of people who are rooting for the Bears. Tonight, and obviously I know a lot of people root for the Vikings, so I'm not even checking my text messages, because I know my family has our group text going, and all I saw was a big great, and I don't know if that was like great or great, so fortunately I didn't read anymore. All right, so give us a call, let's talk Raw. It's a holiday week. I wasn't sure if we're going to get a lot of angles or not on tonight's show, Javier, and it felt like a newsworthy show. You know, I 2 weeks before a pay-per-view is kind of, I don't know if, I mean, I just sort of have the feeling without actually doing a study on this, that that's when the big angles happen, and then kind of the week before the pay-per-view is when they just emphasize everything that's already been set up. And so this did feel actually like a newsworthy show, not that anything went in a direction we didn't expect, but they did establish pretty much the full Raw side of day one officially. And address them through various angles and promos, and we'll get into the effectiveness of those as we go forward. Do you agree with that assessment? This is a pretty newsworthy show, even if you wouldn't say anything unexpected happened.
Yeah, pretty much. Are they taping, by the way, the Raw for next week, or is that the Raw next week going to be live?
You know what? Good question. I don't know. How would one find that?
I was just blown away.
Find that out. I will say WWE Raw, December 27th, tickets. And let's see. They're in Detroit, so I think it's live.
Yeah, because I was blown away that they announced matches during the show.
Yeah, they almost only do that when they have to tape immediately after Raw.
Yeah. That's what I was asking. It was weird. It was like three matches for next week, I think they announced.
They did hype a fatal four-way to help sell tickets tonight. The day one main event is what they advertised to help sell tickets. And I would say this was – it's false advertising in the sense that I doubt they ever truly intended to do that match. But if the same four are in the ring and it's just two-on-two instead of one-on-one-on-one-on-one, I can forgive them, you know, forgiving people essentially the match that they were promised. WWE's has a less than stellar track record, to put it lightly, when it comes to actually delivering – the matches they advertised when they're trying to sell tickets, you know, because of that asterisk at the bottom, card subject to change. They lean on that pretty heavily, but I thought this was a fair alteration of it.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Let's jump to the phone lines here. Again, you can push one on your keypad if you're already listening on your phone and you want to join the conversation, or you can call us 347-215-8558. And then we'll have shows this Wednesday night after Dynamite, and this Friday after SmackDown. And then, actually, we won't probably be live this Friday after SmackDown because it's Christmas Eve. We'll probably be doing a special episode that we tape. So, actually, just a warning for those of you who are looking forward to a live Christmas Eve show, probably not happening, but you can check my report or check pwtorch.com. And if I'm covering it live, then that means I've decided to play it safe on Christmas Eve. And too many of my relatives are not eager to hang out, or I'm not eager to hang out with them, depending on everyone's level of caution. And so there's a chance I'll be covering it live. So just check back Friday night if you're around, and maybe we'll do one. But probably not, because it is Christmas Eve. Okay, let's go to our first caller of the day. We'll go to William in San Diego. William, thank you for calling. What jumps out on Raw tonight that you want to bring up?
Hey, guys. Thank you for taking my call. I want to talk about Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens. I'm really enjoying this dynamic between the two of them. Watching them tonight out there, it looks like they're just having fun. And Kevin Owens, he looks happy that he resigned. And I'll just take it at its word that I think he did like an interview or something saying that the decision was super easy for him once he considered that he's doing it for his family. So, you know, I'm happy for him. And I'm also kind of speaking, you know, a little selfishly as someone who doesn't really watch AEW. I'm happy to still have him there. And, yeah, I still enjoy his work. And I think he looks a little rejuvenated. And, you know, going into WrestleMania, I'm kind of wondering I feel like KO and Seth Rollins could have a really good match with RK-Bro. What do you guys think?
Well, first, as far as Kevin Owens goes, I mean, people who are going to continue to watch SmackDown and Raw, whether it's with enthusiasm or out of tradition or hesitantly, you know, whatever, wherever you are on the WWE product and the ebb and flow of it, Kevin Owens being available to help fill WWE TV time is great. He's a really good fit for WWE in that he can talk and fill TV time. He can make scripted, orchestrated, pre-planned segments feel more spontaneous. He's a good actor. He has the ability to reinvent himself while still staying true to himself, if that makes sense. And he's good in the ring. You know, he elevates any show that he's on in terms of the match quality. And if they're going the direction that they seem to be heading, which is, you know, bringing up more green wrestlers and more big wrestlers, he's just going to be valuable for the next handful of years being around to bring them along. And sometimes, like you could argue Jericho did with him, or, you know, that WWE does sometimes, they match somebody, older veteran with somebody younger to bring them along and elevate them. KO has opportunities to do that. I would love to see at some point Kevin Owens and Austin Theory be involved in some sort of dynamic, perhaps mentor protege, perhaps feuding, whatever it is. That could be fun. So, I mean, yes, there's a bunch of cool matches that could have happened in AEW. No question about it. KO's good, talented, and an asset to wherever he would have ended up. But for someone who's going to keep watching WWE, he made either Raw or SmackDown, and certainly pay-per-views, better because WWE anteed it up. And I'm sure he got, well, without question, KO got the best guaranteed contract of his life. Very likely, you know, seven figures per year, perhaps for the first time. And maybe not just barely a million. So, you know, good for him and his family. And, you know, I'm sure AEW would have paid him very well. And if he was miserable in WWE, Javier, it would have been good for his family to be happier and still make good money and go to AEW. But, you know, we don't always know what's going on in people's heads and which writers or staffers or members of management or fellow wrestlers, they just don't want to leave behind. You know, sometimes people have friendships and there's a level of professionalism that they think they've been treated with, and the quality of the product and the range of opponents they can have isn't, you know, to a fan might seem like, oh, go to AEW, think of all the great matches you can have. But there's definitely other considerations, and KO, you know, mentioned those. Javier, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, plus I was thinking while I was watching him today that with how stacked the AEW roster is with, you know, and the fact they don't move the title belt around a lot, I'm like, I was actually thinking that's more likely to see him as WWE champion than AEW champion. So there's that too. I did not watch last week's Raw. I did watch it 2 weeks ago, and he just felt miserable to me. I don't know if it was just, I didn't say anything, because I didn't know if it was just the storyline, because they were at the point in the story where, you know, people were not believing him. So I didn't know if it was the story or it was just, he was just miserable waiting to get out of there. But it definitely felt like there was more of a pep in his step today. Plus, there's also about the bonus with him is I think he gets a lot more leeway than other wrestlers do, because, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that he does that feel like they're ad-libbed. So, You know, so I think, you know, I'm happy with if he made the right decision. So,
yeah. Yep, very good. So William, I'm not sure we fully answered your question. Remind us what we didn't get to.
The last part about maybe an RK-Bro KO Seth Rollins feud, maybe at WrestleMania, I feel like that would be a lot of fun.
Ah. And who do you want in the face position?
I'm sorry?
Who would be the babyface?
I guess I would stick with RK-Bro as the babyface is going there, and Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins as the heels.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's just with Riddle and Orton, well, I guess there's it's more if they break up where they would go. Like, I almost, Javier, I almost wonder if the Kevin Owens-Seth dynamic is going to lead to a Kevin Owens babyface turn. Like, if that is intriguing, because, I mean, now Kevin Owens been turned so much, and, you know, you can't really trust him when he's a face, and when he's a heel, you kind of like him. And then there's still the question mark of Riddle and Orton, and whether if they split up, if it's because one of them turns on the other, and, you know, I've had discussions with various people about the pros and cons of Orton going heel again, which is sort of yawn, but natural, or trying to put Riddle in a more novel position. If they had that match, and they went with that as a feud, do you like the matchup? Because it would be a really good match. But two, would you see it as a conduit to get somewhere else with either of the two teams in terms of maybe one of them splitting off and going face?
Yeah, I was originally thinking that RK-Bro's disintegration would happen so that they can blow it off at WrestleMania. But I do like the idea of having a title match between those two groups. You tie them together, and then the results, you know, the results could have whatever team loses, then they blow up. And that could be the impetus for either, I mean, even hell, a Seth face turn, if you're not going to turn KO, one of the two can turn that case, or if RK-Bro breaks up, then I've been a proponent for Riddle going heel, if there is a breakup, because I think that would be the more interesting route that you can take. But yeah, I mean, I actually like the idea of them facing off as tag teams at WrestleMania than I do as a Riddle versus Orton match. Although I guess it could happen at Royal Rumble and then you just fast track their breakup to WrestleMania.
Yep. William, anything else for us?
I'm kind of been watching Raw kind of in the background in recent weeks, so I was hoping that you guys could help me out with this one. I paid attention during the Liv and Becky segment, and to me it felt like, particularly this week, there was like a huge ratio or difference in between how the crowd looked visually, just like sitting there still, and how loud they sounded.
I will even expand on that point. I felt like this was a weird crowd. We didn't seek out an on-site correspondent for tonight's show, but I want to get back into doing that in the new year. This would have been a really good week to talk to someone because the crowd felt like, I don't know. I don't know if they were muted or just not particularly enthusiastic about what was happening. Did it seem strange to you, Javier? So, I mean, you can talk specifically about the Liv Becky segment that William's bringing up, but there were multiple times where I was just like, why are they not reacting? Are they muted or are they just not into what's happening? There are a few things that just didn't seem to get the reaction that would be wanted. And there were other times it just felt like it was obvious the reaction that should be there and we didn't hear it.
Yeah, I gave up trying to figure out what the hell was going on with the crowd.
Yeah.
Because it was, I mean, there were a couple of moments where I'm like hearing, like when Lashley, I want to see how the crowd was reacting to Lashley. And it felt like there were some people cheering him, but like you could hear more boos than cheers, but they were showing people cheering him. And, you know, so it just felt really weird. I think part of the problem might be the fact that because you don't have any real defined, I wouldn't say defined, but like, you know, you have like Lashley, who half the crowd likes him, or part of the crowd likes him, part of the crowd doesn't, and then the whole Becky Lynch thing where, you know, some people still love Becky Lynch, some people don't, you know, or, you know, boo her or whatever. I think that's just, you know, really messing with the crowd reactions, and I don't think they know what to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just the Liv Becky segment in general too. I mean, how do you grade Liv, Javier, in terms of her, the material she's being given, and then separately how she's executing it? And you that topic has to be brought up in the context of Becky's really, really good and really, really popular, and she's trying hard, you know, to be a jerk and get people to side with Liv without just it being ridiculous and you know, ham-fisted and heavy-handed. So where do you just kind of, how do you grade what they're doing with Liv, and then, yeah, her execution of it? Because, I mean, I just watch her, and I get the sense she knows she's, you know, swimming in deep water that is exhausting, you know, to like stay afloat as a babyface opposite of Becky without that real established bond with the audience to help carry her.
Yeah. The whole thing was weird. I didn't think this was her best performance. And they did the whole thing with them going, you know, her going to Becky's gym, and then, and we could, I don't know if you want to talk about the actual, that stuff, or save that until later, because that is horrible.
Yeah, we'll focus on Liv, and then we'll dissect that when we don't have William on the phone.
Yeah, so then, like, her cutting to that, it felt awkward the way that she cut to it. It seemed like they had given her way too much to say that, you know, which without really saying anything. And she, I don't know, she just... There was a disconnect, I think, between what she was saying and what she actually feels like. And I would give her, I mean, it's not great material to start with, and I don't think she did anything to really elevate it. And Becky, in terms of the promos, is kind of trying to elevate her as much as possible, saying, oh, you know, I'm proud that you did this because, you know, you rose to my expectations. But there's a problem that it feels that a lot of the stuff that it's a lot of stuff that Liv Morgan is saying that doesn't feel like is true. It's hard to put my finger on it because it doesn't feel like she's convinced the stuff that she's saying is true. And it's kind of like, you know, like she's talking about I'm in her head, but it doesn't really feel like she's in her head when she outmaneuvered her in that skit. So it's like, I don't know, the whole thing has been kind of, you know, I would give it like a C grade, you know, low C probably.
Yeah, it's tough. All right, William, back to you.
Yeah, I wanted to focus a little more on Becky's performance in particular.
Sure,
this kind of goes back to not knowing if they're doing something to the crowd or if it was just a weird crowd, but she comes. They either don't react or WWE makes it seem like they're not reacting that loudly. And I feel like it really diminishes her star power because that's one of the biggest things she had going for her back when she was a babyface was that loud reaction. So I don't know, particularly in the last few weeks, I just feel like they've been trying way too hard with the whole going – you know, resorting to like you people promos, like you people are booing me and you don't respect me and blah, blah, blah. When you can, there's like visual and some audible evidence to the contrary. And she even resorted to like doing a cheap, you know, your local sports team, sucks, promo, which, whatever. So, I tried to get off talking about Becky as a heel for a few weeks because I wanted to give it a try, maybe give it the benefit of doubt a little. But I feel like it's been long enough, and we've been seeing, or at least I've been seeing evidence that it just doesn't work. I don't know where you guys are there.
Yeah, I mean, I wish we could trust crowd response and not think WWE's piping in sound. And just kind of have that real feedback. And that's why I want to get back to on-site correspondence again. So that's kind of a call to action for everybody listening. If you're attending Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown, drop me a line, and we'll start working those back into the show more often. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. We'd love to get you on the phone on our live post shows, you know, sometime between 15 minutes and an hour, 15 minutes after the show's end. It's a good window. And get more of a sense. I thought we got a pretty good sense, you know, in the summer and early fall of what was happening. It started to feel a little repetitive, but I think there's enough new things going on here that I'd like to kind of get that in-person perspective, especially because there's this you know, suspicion constantly that they're messing with the sound because they got so good at that during the Thunderdome era that now we're kind of not getting that feedback, that live focus group that Vince McMahon always talked about, and we're not getting that feedback. So, I mean, I'm still on the, you know, further end of I'm fine with Becky being a heel than most. But it, of course, there's that part of me that's just like, if they didn't have baby faces who could be better than Liv Morgan, if they didn't know they had that, having a baby face, I mean, it's so hard to be a baby face in this era, and especially in WWE, the way they structure things compared to, say, AEW. I think there's some advantages in the way AEW frames and promotes their product to be a baby face, because you can be whatever. That's a whole other discussion. But having Becky right now just be slaying one heel after another coming after and just stripping the formula down and being more simple about it, there's something organic and just desirable about that compared to fighting the headwind, going against the tide, pick your cliche to describe it. So, I mean, I do think, what are we missing out on that we would have otherwise? I don't know. I mean, Javier, have you moved at all on this?
Well, I agree with you. I like Becky as a heel. And I think that with the Bianca, because she was such a strong baby face, I think that worked out well. The problem is they don't have any baby faces because, you know, the way that they push their baby faces is through humiliation. We're going to humiliate them to make you feel bad about them, so you hope they win. And then, but that means you're making them look like a joke from the get-go. And Liv Morgan was stuck in that forever. And then she never really had, like, it never really felt that she went up, like, the card, basically, from basically being a loser who was probably, you know, well, no, I mean, you had Sarah Logan, but, you know, the lore member of their tag team. And now all of a sudden they do the draft and it's like, hey, look at me, I'm a new wrestler and I'm championship contender material. So I don't think they did the work to really, I mean, she has her fans and they're going to be, oh, it's kind of cool. But I think you needed to work her up with stronger feuds to both give her some confidence and not just throw her, like you said, in the, you know, the deep end, you know, to build that up. And then, you know, cause I mean, and with the, you know, the poor woman's been stop and go pushes like constantly, you know, she hasn't had a chance to build any, you know, momentum, using the word the right way,
yes.
you know, yeah. In order, you know, with the, you know, the people who are not already her built-in fan base to really, you know, have something for you to sink your teeth into. And I think that part of it's no fault of her own, but, you know, she doesn't have that would cover for the mistakes they've already made. So, yeah, that's my where I think she's at.
Yep, yep. All right, sounds good. Trying to think if there's anything else I was going to say about that. I guess not. So, William, anything else, any follow-up on that or anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, I also wanted to talk about Big E heading into day one. I feel like, you know, it hasn't been a home run with him. Him winning the title and this whole reign hasn't been a home run, but I think he's been doing fine. But at the same time, I feel like, you know, they obviously could be doing a lot better. Obviously, he lost to Roman Reigns at the Survivor Series, and he got pinned last week by Bobby Lashley after Bobby Lashley already pinned or already beat Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins. So I could see him losing at day one and then maybe them wanting to do like a reset and have him chase the title at Mania. What do you guys think?
Javier, what do you think?
I usually use the rule of thumb that if it's a multi-man match, champion comes out. And I'm with this one, I've got the same feel for this one. The only way that I could see is if Lashley pins one of the other guys and have him chase Lashley. But I'd rather see him survive the four men and then either take each of them on individually or building up to Lashley or something along those lines. Because I think that's more what's in the cards. Because I do think he needs to defeat a couple of these guys one-on-one in order to really solidify him and solidify him as like a champ that like that's on the same level that you would think like a Roman Reigns right now or a or Lashley, because I think he believed Lashley as a champ and Drew McIntyre. I think he needs to get a couple more victories under his belt, which is why I mentioned that it's now in the WWE's hand to see whether to help him grow. So because I think he's done his part. And if the people who follow AEW, it's kind of like Hangman Page. I don't think Hangman Page could have lost to Daniel Bryan and then Chase, because you're basically fighting him down as someone who can't hold it. And I think Big E still is at the position where if he loses it now, he's still like, oh, someone who really can't hold it, which is weird because I know he's defended it a few times. But, you know, I think you need to make him stronger.
No, I'm with you on that. And, you know, I look ahead to WrestleMania and I think if Big E is champion, is he going to headline one of the two nights? And I think the answer is no. Even if it's Lashley or I don't even know who else. Like, I don't know what WrestleMania caliber match there is for Big E to headline one of the nights. I think Becky headlines one night or Charlotte. And then I think, you know, Reigns headlines the other. Unless they split off Lesnar and Reigns and Lesnar's on one show. I don't know. I just, like, when I look at the lay of the land, I can't really imagine Big E getting precedence over a number of women getting that final match of the night. And Reigns is certainly going to headline one of the two nights. So, if not for sure, Lesnar too, even if whether they're against each other or not. And that's a little bit of a conundrum, but it also gives WWE a little more flexibility to stick with Big E because they don't need to put the belt around a so-called, you know, I don't know, so-called legacy star or bigger name, a part-timer coming back, because they do have the women's division that I think they do want to give one of those headline matches to on one of those two nights. So it actually, in a weird way, gives Big E a better chance to stay champion, get some of those singles wins, and they can kind of test whether this is working more. And I'd say in absence of an obvious alternative that they think can affect business differently in a good way, then stick with Big E. I'm for long title reigns. I'm not totally against, once you end a long title reign, having a couple rapid-fire changes, you know, just so it shakes things up. I don't think every title reign has to always be long. But once you get this deep into one, you don't want Big E to be the guy who just couldn't, who gets a reputation. He didn't hold on to it very long. He didn't get the vote of confidence from Vince. That must mean he wasn't very good. I think the longer the better. And then you end up with Big E as a bigger star 3-4 years from now when he's in his late 30s, and you kind of need those legacy stars to help put over the next generation. And I think if you pull the plug on Big E early, you're kind of taking away that ability for him to move to that plateau. And I think he's shown me enough he deserves that, even if it's borderline. Javier, any thoughts on that?
No, I think we already covered the Big E thing.
Yeah. So, William, anything else?
Yeah, my final topic is, I guess it's two topics that are kind of related to each other. The first one, I already mentioned that I don't really pay too close attention when I watch Raw, but another segment that I tried my hardest to listen to what was going on was the Vince McMahon one. And you guys do this for a living, so if you can maybe clarify what he was saying, because I couldn't listen to a word he was saying. I couldn't understand anything. And kind of related to that is Austin Theory. I know he's kind of been being treated as a bit of a goofball right now, and he showed a bit of a more of a serious edge tonight. But still, for weeks, I feel like, weirdly, he's like one of the strongest contenders to win the Rumble. What do you guys think?
I think it's too early for Theory to win a Rumble. I think we're on a more of a 2 to 4 year path for that, given his age. Javier, speak to that first. And then I understood Vince pretty well. You beat the chocolate pudding out of him. I could understand it, but I had to totally focus, you know, to do it, because his vocal cords just feel so loose and gravelly as he talks, and it's just like this. So it's a challenge. I don't know how many people want to tell him to, you know, retake things, but it does feel like, you know, the acoustics in the room and the miking is really important for him right now, and he's got to really work hard to enunciate. That's an issue even on the investor conference calls where, you know, just like, yes, we're going to have big things planned for the next 5 hours. And it's just like, what? You know, what do you think?
Well, yeah, in terms of the Royal Rumble, I don't think he wins. I'm not even sure if he's one of the guys that gets like a super number of eliminations showcase kind of thing either. So
not yet, at least.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think he's more going to be built for the U.S. title and to win and maybe have a long run in that. But yeah, he's young, and I don't think that he's he'll be good like more in the mid card for now. But I do like, you know, I like the idea of him becoming more ruthless. I like the fact he felt a little less goofy today. And it was like, and it was mainly the moment when he goes to knock on Vince's door and then like, and then he walks away and, you know, he kind of felt like he wanted to be taken serious. So I've been fascinated with this whole entire storyline with Vince McMahon's involvement and just the, you know, what they're going to do with him. And, I'm looking forward to what's coming up next for him. And Balor was a good first choice too, opponent for him, and he was showing off in that match. I really liked that match too.
What'd you like about it? I'm with you.
It felt like, I don't want to say snug because that's not the, but in psychologically snug, like he was really going for it. He was really like, you know, aggressive. It felt like an aggressive match. That's pretty much what I felt about it.
Do you believe that theory is getting pushed for reasons other than shallowness that Vince McMahon has often identified with Vince McMahon's choice of who to push? Do you think that there are things with theory that absolutely justify despite the idea, because he's not really tall, you know, Finn Balor's not very tall and they're about the same height. So theory is not John Cena size. And so that's a notch against him. And he's doing comedic stuff. So, you know, we have to be careful not to get too far down the road of he's, you know, going to get a top tier push. It might just be Vince finds his comedy funny, but he doesn't see him as a future top guy. My inclination is you share this much TV time with Vince, it's because Vince is investing in you. Just kind of elaborate on how high you are on theory's upside. And then part two, do you think what they're doing with him is helping him? I believe sharing screen time with Vince McMahon in this, even in this way, but especially if you have to talk me out of it not helping you, because almost everybody on the roster would like that, even if they would hate the experience in a lot of ways, because it's Vince. Some might have fun with it. Some might be really intimidated or think it's, you know, hard to know how to react to him. But I think you have to really talk me out of sharing screen time with Vince, as infrequent as it is these days. It's not an endorsement that this guy is special and you should pay attention. Todd Martin's made the case, you know, strongly on the VIP podcast to fix that. This is not good for Austin Theory, what's happening with him and Vince.
Well, I mean, it depends on where it ends up going, because I'm hoping that it ends up going the direction where this does actually make him a more serious guy, and I think we saw like an inkling of that today. So that's why I'm positive in that respect, and at least in terms of like, you know, where he ends up, I think his, you know, minimum is going to be like on a Corbin level, which is a good place to be at, because he's your, you know, mid card. You know, when you need somebody to fight somebody, you know, you've got that on that level at least. So, you know, or a Miz level, something like that, which is an important tool for how WWE books things at the very least. You know, high end, obviously, you know, high end could be anything. And, you know, I've actually followed Theory since the Evolve days, and the whole storyline where he, you know, in Evolve, his gimmick was, he's going to go at NXT and go to WWE. He doesn't care about the indies and doesn't care about Evolve. And that was, I mean, it was a great storyline. And his rival was Darby Allin, who was the indie guy. So, and then watching him go through NXT and all that stuff, he's been a character, a wrestler that, you know, I've seen move through the different ranks. And he kind of fits it. And the other thing that, you know, he's spending time with Vince McMahon. So as long as he doesn't, you know, smile too much or do one of those, you know, one of the, or not smile enough, one of those, you know, he's engaged with Vince McMahon. I mean, you know, he's going to give you more of his time and listen more to what you have to say. And that's, going to be a leg up.
All right, very good. William, anything else you want to add before we let you go?
Yeah, I guess I just wanted to clarify a little when I mentioned that Austin was like the strongest contender going into the Rumble. I didn't mean that as a personal endorsement for me, like saying I want this guy to win. I just kind of meant it like I feel like reading how WWE is booking the whole roster, it feels like he's the only one at the moment who's like, or one of the few only ones who's being kind of positioned to be in that role. And I guess a lot of that could change past day one because we still have that pay-per-view to look forward to. But yeah, as of right now, that's kind of how it feels to me. Like he's the strongest, like he's the most likely to win if I had to read how WWE books things.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is how I interpreted what you said initially, you know, just because I think it is good to separate those two things. You know, what I think is a good idea or what I want, sometimes what you think is a good idea, you don't want to see. So there's like three categories. A good idea, I want to see it, but maybe it's not a good idea. There's probably other categories too, but or I'm just reading the tea leaves. This is how WWE books. I'm picking up on the signs, regardless of whether I want it or whether I think it's a good decision. I think that's where they're heading. Javier, do you buy into that at all? Could Austin Theory actually be on that level of a fast track that Vince McMahon mentoring him for another month is all it takes for Theory to win the Rumble, and then McMahon is sort of going to try to help elevate Big E by being in a program where his protege is going after a world title, and it's Theory is sort of the embodiment of a young Mr. McMahon, athletically handsome, rugged, good looks, great body, everything Vince McMahon imagines that he would have been had he, you know, had his dad wanted him to wrestle, had he wrestled, had he been coordinated enough to wrestle. And he just sort of lives vicariously through Theory, and that this is some actually big story arc that William is getting a sense of early, and we could actually get Theory challenging, say, Big E at WrestleMania, not in the show, the match that closes one of the nights, but one that works underneath either Charlotte or Sasha or Bailey or Becky or Bianca in the actual main event.
Yeah, I mean, I usually have some sort of sense of a short list of people for the Royal Rumble, and I don't have that for either now. Because some of the people that, you know, because I was expecting Drew McIntyre to probably win so he can challenge Roman Reigns. But, I mean, that kind of feels like he's so far from that as he is wrestling Madcap Moss now. It feels to me like that decision would be more like, oh, crap, we got to get, you know, we need to get something going. We need to get something moving. And like, I can almost see that happen had KO left. And they needed somebody to shoot to the top to give them, you know, to do something. So, I mean, I can't discount it 100%, but it feels more of a panic move. And, but I can't put them, I can't say that that might not be panic time, for them from time to time. So,
and just, you know, if there is a level of self-consciousness about not creating new stars right now and going with too much recycling, you know, if it's Seth in the main event instead, you know, I mean, Seth against Big E, it'd be really hard to get me excited about that. And that's not because I'm not a fan of Big E or Seth's work and talent or the potential of the match. It just doesn't feel fresh enough.
What leads to Creed is what you mentioned was the fact that it's not going to be the main event one of the two nights. So that adds that you could just do that if you want to try to see if he could get over on that level.
Well, William, be sure to call in the Monday after the Rumble if that happens, and we'll give you the floor to brag.
Yeah, absolutely. There's evidence now, and I'll take you up on that. Thank you guys for taking my call. Shout out to Veer, who will be debuting. He's coming soon, as I heard.
Oh my God,
a good one.
he's hanging out with Eva Marie somewhere, I think.
Or Elias.
And Elias.
Oh God.
Dead, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so weird. All right, thanks, William. Great call.
Thank you.
I want to grab an email that covers something we talked about in that call, which was Liv Morgan. JB from Detroit said, to me, Liv Morgan promos sound like the stereotypical woman voice that reads your audiobook off of Audible. It's so sing-songy, it's almost cringy to me. Also, and this gets into a topic we haven't covered, I'm not sure how to feel about AJ and Amos. Who am I supposed to like? The breakup came out of nowhere and with not much subtlety or storytelling. I feel like the storytelling was something that had been invested in pretty heavily and would have a better payoff. Love the show and go VIP. So I don't know if we have to add more about Liv, but a comment there, you know, and I mean, well, I'll just say it. I just don't think Liv still has that distinct personality that doesn't feel like she's just trying to project a personality. I don't know what her natural voice is. Her smiling feels put on. It seems like, and I mean, I don't think she's awful, but I just don't think there's anything, there's a there yet for her. And I think that's probably, you know, why her push has been kind of scattershot so far, because maybe behind the scenes, they're not quite sure who she is or how she should project herself. So you can comment on that again if you want, Javier, but the AJ Omos thing was one of the standout moments of the show for me from a just podcast analysis standpoint, because especially as it came with the crowd, I alluded to it earlier, the idea of Omos beating up AJ and turning on him should have gotten a big response. It should have gotten major boos. We love AJ. Screw you, Omos. You're unappreciative. You're a jerk. He took you under his wing. Or I think what they actually intended was for people to cheer this giant who they've carefully booked to beat up everybody, but not do so in a way that makes him seem like he is a jerk. Like he's just sort of a big guy who's under the influence of AJ, but trying to just do things the right way. And I think that's kind of how they portrayed him. He hasn't been nasty he hasn't been a big, nasty, stinky giant, as Hulk Hogan used to call Paul White. And AJ was supposed to be the slimy guy, but AJ's out there going back and forth with Miz, who's manipulating AJ. And I think they told a muddled story and they got a muddled reaction as a result of it. And it's something that I think they should use as to reflect on and figure out what did we do wrong here? Because that should feel like a big angle. And instead there was, I just think, a lot of ambivalence or conflicted feelings. And frankly, just, you know, the ambivalence, not strong feelings about what happened. What did you read on that, Javier?
Well, my read was early on that AJ Styles was going to be the face about, I'm not sure it was 1 week or 2 weeks ago, mainly because when they first started seeding the idea that they're having issues, he did not blame Omos. He was saying, oh, you know what, you know, there was this mistake, and he was being level-headed, and he wasn't, like, flipping out or anything. I'm like, okay, well, he's being the adult in the room. So when they break up, it's probably going to end up, you know, so that's the first time that the thing went.
Yeah.
But, you know, and this is weird because number in WWE is like over signpost stuff where it's like, hey, idiot, look at this. And yeah, there wasn't that this time. And yeah, so it kind of feels a little bit like, you know, you're not sure, but like the last three times that they've done stuff in, you know, backstage and interactions with AJ Styles, he's not been, I mean, he's still got a little bit of the, you know, dickish kind of, you know, personality, but he hasn't like said anything that was outright, you know, crazy. And then, you know, when he confronts the Miz in this, like you said, it was the going the back and the forth, and he had trust in Omos. He wasn't really taking him for granted. He came across as him being a friend. But yeah, that was not really signposted at all. Plus with AJ Styles also trying to keep not like completely changing his demeanor and still kind of being AJ Styles, I think it did end up at the end of the day being muddled. And when you just essentially have Miz cut the promo for Omos because you can't let Omos talk, you know, and it felt like it was literally written for him. Like if Omos had written what he wanted to say and handed it to the Miz, that's how awkward that was, because he was basically saying, you know, so, you know, like what could only actually be in his most innermost thoughts. And I know they seeded it earlier by saying that, oh, we just had a great conversation, but like Miz like became Omos in that thing. So I do think that was what was intended, was to, for AJ Styles to be the baby face in this and Omos be the heel. But I do think it was not really signposted too well. Because they might have just made this decision like 2 weeks ago.
how confident are you in that AJ was supposed to be the babyface here?
As of today and like the previous 2 days.
Yeah,
I think
as of right now.
So I would say I'm about 70%, I would say.
Yeah.
70% on that. I mean, you may talk me down to 65, but to be on the safe side. But I think 70% is where I'm at.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't think there's – I'm, you know, kind of thinking about everything they've done, and I'd have to go back. I'm with Bruce Hazlewood in his report. I didn't think they were going to do it this quickly. I thought they were going to play this out more. Maybe they'll be fine next week. I mean, WWE sometimes does that. They'll you know, make up off camera and work it out, and they'll be seeing eye to eye again. I'm not – all along I thought they were going to turn Omos babyface, but – at the same time, if you think about what WWE wants to do with him the WWE argument to keep him heel would be he could end up being the opponent for Big E. He could win the Rumble, and they could try to get a WrestleMania match out of him as a heel. I just don't think he's been heelish. You know, like refusing to tag to AJ is if AJ is standing there taking all kinds of credit for Omos's success, if Miz is telling the truth at all or a version of the truth, then I don't know. You know, but I didn't expect the breakup this soon, and I'm still not sure they're permanently broken up. I mean, what do you think the odds are that this isn't the end of them as a team, and they kind of AJ talks his way back into it? Or did the way this played out with the physicality of what Omos did and not in refusing to tag the Styles? Is this it?
Yeah, I do think it's it. Why they went at it now, I do not know. I do think it's it. And it did seem like early on, because the crowd kind of started getting behind Omos, and it kind of felt that way. But they does feel like in the last couple of weeks, the Styles taking credit kind of died down a little bit.
Yeah.
It wasn't like the volume went down. And a lot of the interactions, that's when it started, because it started getting weird for me like probably 2 weeks ago. I didn't see last week, so it would have been like 2 weeks ago, where it's like, okay, they're kind of heading into neutral territory. They're not tipping off one way or the other. They pulled back on some stuff, and I'm like, are they trying to decide which way they're going to go? Just the fact that like it felt like Omos was aligned with the Miz a little bit there, that's kind of like what put it over the top to me. And like maybe after this he becomes Miz's personal colossus.
Yeah, I mean, are you in a generic sense in favor of AJ becoming a babyface again? Because I think fans would be behind that.
Yeah, I would like to see him as a babyface and give him one more strong run. As a babyface, hey, maybe win the Royal Rumble and challenge Reigns. But
yeah,
I'm a huge AJ Styles fan, so that's just wishful thinking.
Well, I think AJ's. I mean, I'd want to kind of reassess just the depth chart for Raw and kind of see where things are falling. But you know, AJ is a babyface against Austin Theory, bringing him along. AJ is a babyface against either Kevin Owens or Seth Rollins. I think you can make that work. I don't know if they feed him to Omos if that puts him in a position where, I mean, whoever Omos faces, he's going to win. So I'm trying to think, like, who else? I mean, I guess they could feud Styles and Miz. but there's not a lot of other heels on this roster. I mean, Styles and Otis, when Otis is done with Orton. Styles and Ziggler means nothing. Styles Rude means nothing. So I don't know. You know, but it's not a huge list the other way either. So, yeah.
Yeah, it felt when KO pretty much went solidly into the heel side of the ledger, I kind of felt like, yeah, okay, I could see. Well, and then you also have Priest, who they're doing this weird, you know, he loses his mind thing, which could lead to a heel turn down the road. So that's also a possibility. Because with KO moving over, I think that kind of like – and it freshens up AJ Styles because, you know, having him as a face for a while, I think freshens him up.
Yeah. When a few people drop off, William did a good job bringing up different points. But so if anybody wants to call back, we'll bring you on. I know it's holiday week, and I can see our switchboard's a little lighter than usual, just in terms of even people listening in. But feel free to hit one or give us a call if you do want to jump on and join the conversation and give your thoughts on Styles and Omos in particular also. And you can also bring up something that we have not brought up yet, if you would like. Let's see. Actually, it looks like 313 jumped on. So let's go to 313. You took us up on it. State your name and where you're calling from.
How you doing? I'm Grant from Detroit. We talked before.
Yeah. Hey, Grant. Great to hear from you. I recognize the area code. In case you're joining us midstream, no NFL spoilers for me on tonight's game. If you didn't hear me ask for that earlier.
I definitely jumped in midstream, but I didn't have a question about AJ and Omos, but I had a question that I didn't get a chance to call in yesterday, and I had sent you an email. So if you see it, then your inbox don't pay attention. But
fair enough.
It was something I was thinking about last week when they were kind of skewing Bobby Lashley, like, face a little bit, and then this week it really came into perspective. I wonder if you see Bobby Lashley going face, winning the Rumble, and then going over to SmackDown and challenge Reigns for the belt, seeing as that probably would solve a lot of the issues of not having anybody ready for Reigns.
Yeah, I mean, that crossed my mind in some form or fashion, Javier, because once they booked Reigns and Lesnar for day one, they're going to need a match for the Rumble, but you shouldn't do a brand switch for that. But you could have Lashley win the Rumble. And, you know, they're telling a story of him going babyface so that he's the Reigns challenger. Does that feel WrestleMania worthy to you?
I think they still need to do some work, is why I like Lashley a lot as champion. It's hard to get someone on the level of like Reigns, you know, to really oh my God, I can't believe this match is happening. I think there needs to be some more work done there. I don't know about that. And I mean, there's the specter of the Rock. I just can't ignore that, you know, which leads to why I think there might be why I don't have a short list for possible Rumble winners for that reason. Because it doesn't seem like they're signposting anybody for it. But, you know, Lashley, I don't know. I mean, I'd rather see Lashley Brock. I'm one of those people that I think would be a better, you know, with one on either side. If they turn Lashley into someone who just likes to fight and, show that he's the best and just drop the – because, I mean, honestly, if you just drop MVP hitting people with the cane, he's a babyface. So – I think you really could do something with that.
All right. Grant, any follow-up on that, or you can change topics if you have anything else?
No, I think that was about all I had. I just was curious a little bit. I'm just looking at basically the depth chart, though, and it's not really deep, and I don't think we're going to see The Rock this year. So, I mean, outside of maybe Drew, I don't know where else they would go, so Lashley seemed to make sense to me. They protected him pretty much more than anybody else around.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point. Grant, appreciate you jumping in.
No problem.
Yeah, take care. I think, you know, we're getting close to the Royal Rumble now, Javier, and day one changes the cadence a little bit and the lead-in to the Rumble than usual. Normally it would be, you know, wrapping up our last pay-per-view of the year by now, and the next one would be the Rumble. So it delays some clarity because day one, you know, we're going to have to see what happens with Lesnar and Reigns and in the Fatal 4-Way for the Raw title as we kind of get a sense of the lay of the land for who the Rumble contenders are. But it's a fun time of year when, you know, when it's not obvious who's going to win the Rumble. That's more fun when you can make a case for, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 people with a straight face and not just, you know, be obviously wrong and just fantasy booking, but like, you know, the lay of the land. And I mean, we might be having one of those years, at least at this stage. I don't know how much thought you've given to how deep the list of actual potential winners are, but I mean, if you throw Austin Theory in there because of his association, his association with Vince McMahon makes me think if Vince is associated with it, I wouldn't consider it otherwise, but since he is, I would. And then you have the chance of Lashley winning, not to face Big E, but to surprise people and say, I want Reigns, and going babyface. You have Lesnar getting screwed by Heyman, perhaps, and then winning the Rumble to then get a rematch against Reigns. I don't know how deep your list goes, Javier, and again, I don't know how much you thought about it, but any other names you want to throw out there? Big E loses, I guess he could win it again. Seth could win and challenge Big E.
Yeah, Big E losing and challenging Reigns to move over to SmackDown. That was the one thought.
He loses, but he doesn't lose. So he's got that credibility of not having lost the title because, you know, Kevin Owens or Seth takes the pin against Lashley.
Yeah. Basically what they did with Lashley when he lost the U.S. Or
that's right.
US,
yeah.
That's one of them. Brock Lesnar, like you said, with to get whatever number rematch 300 between him and Reigns is. I possibility Edge, if you want to get some star power in there.
Absolutely.
That would be one of them. If they do the Randy Orton, Riddle split early and blow it off by Royal Rumble, then one of them can win. I don't like Seth Rollins where he is right now, but if this is my 70% is correct and AJ Styles is a babyface, maybe a Styles Reigns match would be interesting. At least the wrestling fans I know will be into that. I don't know how much they're going to be otherwise. I had Priest early on, but that seems kind of like he's on a slower burner. That's pretty much off the top of my head without looking at the actual roster. or if they want to go nuts and get one of the people that they like from NXT, but that's long shot.
Yeah, Bron Breakker, quick elevation. All right, very good. Our number, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. I'll go back to the mailbag here. Zach in Texas says, WWE star-making process continues to baffle me. Piper Niven emerges 2 weeks ago, Dewdrop, as a fantastic monster heel. She looked great in that match with Bianca. Hell, I thought if they got behind her and really built her, she could have won the Royal Rumble and dethroned Becky Lynch, sort of like Vader did Sting in 92. Instead, they run the match 3 weeks in a row put Bianca over in the end. Sure, the visual of her with Dewdrop across her back was a sight to behold, but it wasn't worth sacrificing a potential new star. At the same time, they're maybe planning to have Liv Morgan beat Becky Lynch. They can't go through with that. Liv cannot be the person to end the GOAT's 500 active days as champion. She's simply not over enough, especially since I don't count piped in cheers. That attack video posted to Twitter was so perfectly shot as to be implausible and did nothing to help her case. Neither did the promo tonight. It was just okay. And then Becky outclassed her on the mic again. Putting the belt on her would be a huge mistake. All right, so two topics there to get into broadly and layers to each of them. First, we'll go with the easier one, then we'll dissect the live video in the four different camera angles. they just can't help themselves, but we'll save that. Dewdrop losing to Bianca Belair when Belair hits the KOD. Javier, mistake or not, based on how Dewdrop's portrayed herself as a heel and not having been defined down yet, does losing to Bianca hurt her, or does just holding her own against Bianca and getting three matches against her, does that actually we have to kind of realize where she was a month ago and go, that actually has elevated her, even if she wasn't able to win the feud?
Yeah, I think the idea Dewdrop has a trump card in her pocket, which is Piper Niven. she could always go back to that, and I believe I read somewhere where that they trademarked that name. So her losing and being embarrassed by this and then saying, screw Dewdrop, I'm going by my real name, Piper Niven.
Yep.
And, already kind of reframes the character. I think the idea is basically get Bianca a strong win over, someone who, she could do impressive feats of strength against, and just to set her up for the eventual feud with Becky Lynch, whether that's, right post day one start the road then would be my guess against, you know, between those two. That way Bianca looks strong while Doudrop, you know, against Piper Niven and feuds with somebody else, maybe Liv Morgan or coming off of losing to Becky Lynch or something along those lines.
If how deep is the list of wrestlers that Doudrop could wrestle next, whether she switches to Piper Niven or not? Because if Liv Morgan were to lose to Becky, they could go right to that as a secondary feud. They could do Piper as a heel against Nikki, ASH. That's about it. I guess Rhea Ripley too, because they haven't done that. So Nikki, Rhea, or Liv, if she – actually, I'm not – that's just what's going to be next for her. There's no other options unless she goes into a tag team. And I guess she could, like, team with Tamina against babyface tag champs or something. But if she – they're not going to turn her babyface again. So I guess those are just – that's about it. Those are the options, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they're rather sparse. I mean, you do have Bayley coming back.
Yeah.
And Asuka, maybe?
I
still don't know where her whereabouts are.
I know.
What her situation is. And a little, you know. I don't follow social media closely, so I'm worried. I mean, I could probably find out, but, you know. I mean, those are the only two that I can think of. Again, you know, barring bringing anybody up from NXT.
All right. Let's go to the other topic. We put it off long enough. The social media angle. I give Becky and Liv some credit. For, you know, I suspect they were trying to come up with something. You know, what do we do that can fill some TV time, give us another chapter in this feud? Liv saying, I overheard Becky say after she beat me up, she's going to go work out in Iowa. I'm like, we don't need that. That does not sound plausible. And then Becky has like this, it's like NXT shot it, you know, like with the five camera angles of something that nobody would film with five cameras. And you see shots. And then they cut to a new angle, and you're seeing what they just shot, but there's no camera visible. But there would be if they weren't shooting it, you know, like doing a, you know, a post close-up of Liv and then splicing it in. It was so orchestrated. It was implausible. That would have been such a better skit if the production values were lower. And I don't get how they don't think about that. But they clearly don't, because they don't value that aspect of making things a little more real and a little less you know, clearly produced. Just like, why are they filming Bobby Lashley about to change clothes in the locker room? You know, what if MVP didn't walk up at that moment? Why are we showing Bobby Lashley about to take his clothes off? Vince McMahon, why are we using valuable national TV time to show him scribbling on a yellow legal pad? Why can't you follow Austin Theory into Vince's office? Why can't you follow MVP walking up to Lashley? Why can't you film a workout session with Becky with one camera that is ostensibly there because they like to review the tape? They can't help themselves. And that stuff does drive me nuts because it's so easy to fix. And it's part of what Eric Bischoff was talking about, the lack of any sense of grit and everything is so shined up as to be unrealistic. So you have that. And then you have the whole thing of, oh, I knew you were coming, Liv. So I'm going to put up my students in there disguised as me. It just was layer after layer of implausibility and overbooked. And I didn't like it in so many different ways. How about you? Can you add to that? Do you disagree with any of that? What was your take?
Well, I would just disagree with the, in general, I take it as conceit of the omniscient camera in WWE. It's the way they do their stuff. So, you know, I've never come as upset as the, you know, the, as you are with the, Shane McMahon camera. I just take it as is. The problem I have with this.
I wish I could. I envy you. I think it's like the dumbest thing in the world, but I know some people are like, no, it's all fake. So who cares if it looks fake? And I'm
Well, it's because it's like I see it as this is a TV show about a wrestling program, you know, so that's
right. And that's
like
way less effective than a sporting event shot
in a sporting event way.
All right.
But here's the problem. It's the moment that they – I agree with you that like in another universe, but, you know, it's the WWE. I've been watching it for God knows how long.
Fair enough.
But the thing is that when – this one in specific is starts off like it feels like it's a person running in with an actual camera phone. So it's, you're getting the first person view of it. Right. So it's like, okay, well, this is good. And then all of a sudden you switch to another thing that looked like a first person view. Like if someone else was recording, But then, like, all of a sudden people start, you know, appearing from, like, weird places, and you somehow still get 90 camera cuts. And then when the fighting starts, you get the shaky cam stuff. And I'm like, you know, because you've introduced like, okay, the camera's there. Okay, my mind's already, okay, this is, the camera's omniscient. We're getting a sneak peek behind the curtain that we're not meant to see. But when you have someone who the idea is that it's Liv Morgan with the Kendall stick in one hand and the phone in the other, and then, you know, just keep that angle and just do that. But then when they cut to, you know, and then, like, you know, they do cuts to do, like, a surprising thing where, you know, she sees that's not Becky, and then she backs up, and then Becky's standing behind her, surprised. And then, like, you know, she takes the kendo stick, you know, she just hands off the kendo stick in, like, this scene that looked like would be in a, it's a comedic spot that would happen only in a movie.
Yeah.
And so, like, all of this combined into one just was like, what the hell are we doing? And then you're talking about the implausibility of, like, I overheard, like you said, I overheard that. That's what I was mentioning earlier, was that the stuff that she was told to say didn't seem like it was real. It was everything about that was breaking, breaking common sense or breaking reality. And, you know, a Becky playing 4D chess. Like, I knew you were going to, I knew you were going to go here. I dropped that line because I knew you were going to come here. And then she's saying, oh, well, he goes, you thought so much about this. That means I'm in your head. And I'm like, would you just shut the hell up? I mean, it's, and you know what? I just thought, I just realized that I'm in your head thing is also what they're doing with Charlotte and Toni Storm on SmackDown. So it's like not even original, because they're stealing from another bad storyline. It's just I just hated that entire thing that already like soured me on the Liv Morgan segment. And it's like. And Becky tried to bring it back, and it's just, this has just been a train wreck. I just don't I don't think it's because Becky's a heel, but it definitely gives the people who are like, oh, she shouldn't be a heel, more ammunition, because it's not working, because, you know, the garbage that they're doing. And it felt like the worst of the cinematic matches, and I was a huge fan of cinematic matches, and this felt like one of the worst. Probably the worst. Like, if you were to consider that a cinematic match, you know, like from the cinematic era, this would have been the worst.
Yes. This was so many reasons you mentioned that I didn't get to. I'm not well done. It just makes me wonder. Like, I wonder if everybody was happy with this and how that makes me feel about everybody involved, or if it's sort of throw your hands up, I'll do my part, and then I'm going to go back, you know, like Becky, I'm going to, you know, just tell me what to do, I'll do it, and then I'm going to go back to being a mom, and, you know, hopefully I'll just have a good match with Liv, and I'll do my mic work. And she's, you know, like, not every wrestler's thinking about all the stuff that we're talking about, but it's just amateur hour. Like, there should be the narrative structure. There should be rules of engagements about how they film things. It should make sense. And I'm not going to give up on the idea that pro wrestling is, and I know you're like, well, I'm resigned to it. It's what they do, but they don't always do it. You know, we don't often get the Randy Orton Edge, you know, close up of, you know, where there's clearly an invisible camera shooting an angle that was, you know, actually post-produced in later. We don't get that for a reason, because it'd be ridiculous. It would take everybody out of it. And so, but I know I'm, you know, on the extreme end of that. But here it was just like, it was almost like, let's just flaunt how unaware we are about what our narrative structure is for this show and just do a hodgepodge of a bunch of different things. And it just feels like the worst of TNA was on display here, which is, and you know, I was critical of NXT doing it in some of the skits leading up to pre-2.0, especially right before that, where we don't need six camera angles for two wrestlers having dinner. We just don't. Especially when there's a shot from one angle and a shot from the other, and you'd see the camera shooting the other angle, and it's not there. So you're telling so many people, way more people than they realize, this is all spliced together, and we shot it multiple times and then spliced it together. when you're filming an that's fine for a sitcom, but it's not fine when a camera is present for something you're presenting, not as a show about wrestling, but a wrestling show. And it's just, they make it way more complicated than they need to. And I think it takes people out of that ability to immerse themselves in the simulation of it being a sport that's not scripted. And I think the more you can make it feel unscripted, even if you're giving up a little bit of your production value toys, you end up with a product that people can then invest emotionally in more easily.
Yeah. And if you want to like split the baby and still, you know, have multiple camera angles, just have them all set up ahead of time so they wouldn't be able to catch each other and only use those angles.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
You know, as opposed to reverse angles. Cause I know you want to be a director, but you know, for movies and stuff, but you're a wrestling program.
And a director wouldn't do what you did. You know, learn how to direct then. I like, and part of my frustration is it's as simple as, you know, AEW does this. John Moxley will yell, "Hey, camera guy, follow me over here. I'm going to Tony's office." Bang, bang, bang. Walks in on Tony. That's so easy. And instead, WWE would go, "Let's set up a camera of Tony Khan sitting at his desk doing something immensely boring that we would never film, but somehow we know to go live to him at that moment for the unexpected knock on the door from John Moxley, but Tony is ignoring the fact that the camera's red light is on and is filming him, you know, writing something, a note to somebody, or texting. Like, when Tony go, we're on national TV, why are you filming me right now? Like, none of it makes sense. So it's so easy to fix it. Like here, Liv could have said more plausibly, "I heard that Becky was trying to make some money on the side doing one of her training seminars," which, by the way, I've heard is a ripoff. Nobody else do it. Or Becky is making this social media movie about what a great, nice trainer she is. And she brought some of her people that she likes to train with in, and they're going to do this propaganda piece for some, you know, Sami Zayn-like documentary. But by the way, whatever happened to poor Sami's documentary? And whatever. I mean, you can sit here and brainstorm and come up with 8 better ideas than that in 2 minutes than I just had. And so there's this thing that you know that Liv would have heard about. She doesn't have to overhear Becky saying it as Becky's walking away from beating her up, which is just dumb. She could have had this story that makes total sense. Becky had cameras set up for a reason. She's filming some sort of documentary or special. And Liv wanted to ruin it. And then that explains why all the footage is there. Like, why can't they just go to that trouble? Like, I'm not asking them to change something that's difficult and gets in the way of other things they're doing. I'm just saying put 20 extra seconds or 2 minutes of extra thought into it, and then it just makes sense. Just film it slightly differently or set up the presupposition of the camera being there with something that just makes some sense. It's easy. It's free. It doesn't hurt anything, but it improves everything.
That was cathartic.
For me. All right. Ed, hopefully, you know, the listeners got something out of it too. All right. Ed in High Desert, California. Good evening, Wade and Javier. Tonight's show was fine. I'd say it falls more into the positive good show column. However, regardless of how good or bad the show is, it feels like there's not much energy during the shows. The match with Bianca and Doudrop was good. Bianca's feats of strength is getting kind of old, though. Definitely a surprise to have an actual pin. Yeah, I guess we got to applaud them for that, don't we, Javier?
Yeah, I think that's actually one of the notes I wrote, that surprised the number of actual finishes we had tonight.
Yeah. Curious, do you think doing the Hulk Hogan Earthquake-type storyline with Doudrop and Bianca would have been better, Javier?
I can barely remember that story. I remember that was the
covered it.
I remember being scared for Hogan. Because he felt like an actual threat.
Yeah.
I mean, they probably could have done that, but this feels like it was more like get Bianca a strong win as opposed to like a real deep feud.
Yes. All right. I'm kind of lost on Priest. This is still Ed in High Desert. I get on one hand, they're having him go out there and go in a certain direction, but he also feels meaningless, especially him being U.S. champion. Yeah, I mean, nobody talks about Damian Priest. Nobody calls us. Nobody emails about us. We don't really think of bringing him up. He's one of those guys who just feels like if you weren't watching WWE, but you had sort of an idea of what wrestling was and you watched, you'd be like, oh, that guy must be one of their top stars. And if he's not, you'd think he would be soon. And yet there's still just something not quite there with him. You know, nobody's going, they should push Damian Priest harder. He'd be so fresh on top. I'm just not hearing that. I mean, I don't listen to every podcast or see every social media post or anything, but I just don't think there's a movement for him. But I also don't think, like, you know, anyone's going, why is he U.S. champion? He's not that good. Is he at the right level now? Is that useful? Is it, should they go and try to get him in the mix? Like, he wasn't a name like that's on the tip of people's tongue for winning the Rumble, but why not? I mean, he's got a look, a size, he's older, he's experienced. There's, you know, kind of a maturity there where it's sort of strike now or never. Why not have him win the Rumble and go after a babyface Big E? But that's not really being talked about. What's not clicking, or do you disagree with the setup of that question, Javier?
Well, I mean, I thought that he was early on the same trajectory that Lashley was, and that he was at the spot where he was winning the title and then eventually lose it, win the Rumble, and then, you know, challenge. That was where the direction I thought he was. But then they changed his gimmick. I guess they did not feel like he had – because, I mean – he had a little bit – I felt like he had a little bit of a connection. I just don't – but I think that they didn't do anything to really, like, more feed it and like, really explain who Damian Priest was. All they had him do is come out and say a couple words in Spanish and then repeat them in English. You know
– which is like, how you started out.
Sí, empiezo hablando en español. I start speaking Spanish, después cambio en inglés, and then I change to English. you know, that's how they do that stuff. You know, and it was like – we never really got – I mean, it was cool that he was with Bad Bunny, and they were definitely into it, but it never really felt like he got the full court press like Lashley did. And now it looks like they're trying to tweak his character with the whole – I mean, and that's one of the things I noted, you know, like how they changed his entrance, where like half his entrance is evil and half of his entrance is angelic. So to show that he's like, yeah, you know – this dueling nature within, and I'm like, but you're not really, you know, you're not creating a character, you're creating a caricature, because it's not like this is going to lead to something, you know, it's not going to lead to something that's going to, you know, this is what he is now. He's this guy that has an angel and a devil, and then he could switch back and forth. That's all he is.
Yeah.
They're not going to go into why. They're not going to go into, you know, outside of like, you know, and I wrote it as soon as the match started. When I saw him come out and I saw that intro, and I heard that he was wrestling Dolph Ziggler in a championship contenders match. I just wrote on going in all that good and evil thing. Priest is going to cost himself this match with his dark side, isn't he? From the get go. And I'm like, and then that's all it's going to be. It's going to be like, yep, a Jekyll Mr. Hyde. They just created a Jekyll Mr. Hyde character. And it's not going to mean anything or be developed beyond that. It's like, here's our Jekyll and Hyde character. And I think that kind of, at this point, I think they might think that that's going to lead into something later down in the future for him. I think it's just mid-card stuff from this point on with this gimmick change.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it isn't. It doesn't mean it'll work, but maybe they do have just something specific in mind where, you know, he just embraces the dark side, and the reason he's coming up short is he's, you know, going to the dark side and snapping at the wrong time, and so he's just going to have that attitude from the beginning. But he doesn't really have, like, an established friendship to say, no, don't do this. This is wrong, that he turns against. And so he's just sort of there. And, I mean, he was sort of there prior to WWE, too. You know, it's just, you know, the thought was he'll really shine in a Vince McMahon main roster setup, even if he hasn't really jumped off, you know, into main event status prior to being on the main roster in his career. But there's something to be said, you know, for being a guy that indie promoters or, you know, other promoters see something and push to the top. And if nobody has, and the crowd hasn't responded to you, it's hard for that to then suddenly happen because Vince McMahon has a storyline idea for you and gives you a big, big, big new entrance.
Yeah. And the thing with him was, even in NXT, because I think his gimmick origin was supposed to be, oh man, I forgot his name now, which is the literary character who has a painting and like everything he does to himself doesn't hurt him, but it you can see like his painting gets messed up. What's his name?
Who are you talking about? Say that again.
It's a literary character that there's a painting of himself and. Yeah. He's like, you know, into debauchery and stuff. Anything he does to his body doesn't affect his body, but like his painting is like resembling his soul, and he's like immortal.
Yeah, I don't know.
I forgot what it's called. I'll probably look it up while we continue. But sure. That was kind of his thing, was because that was the idea, is that he's going to live forever, and he, you know, the whole debauchery thing, and you know, but like, how much debauchery can you do when you are a PG-13 product?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like I got the concept of the character. I'm like, this is cool, but this is something that's not going to work in the WWE. You know, NXT was a little bit more edgy, so you know, okay. But once it translated to WWE, that they just did the whole Archer of Infamy thing. It's like, what is that?
I know. Yeah, there's just not enough there for people to really latch onto. Okay, so I'll continue here with Ed's email. For Omos, does he win at the Rumble, go on to WrestleMania, and beat Big E? What's the road for Omos exactly? For AJ, him versus Mysterio, Priest, or Edge would all be good. Could you imagine Vince McMahon putting Omos, as limited as he is, on the microphone? He could barely get his line out, and the syntax was all screwed up tonight. I mean, I just don't think Big E's an opponent who, I mean, boy, that would be a work of a big effort to detailed script a match that Big E could have with Omos. I just don't think he's the right kind of opponent. He's a powerhouse, but so much shorter. I mean, I guess he could throw Omos around. Maybe that's a positive, but in terms of creating movement and turning it into an interesting match, not that that's a requirement for Vince, but I don't know. What's the feasibility of trying to make that happen out here?
I don't like that idea at all. I'm having flashbacks to Giant Gonzalez, you know? You know, I mean, I don't think he could be as bad, but I think just use him as a, I don't know. I get the feeling he's going to end up being Mrs. Heavy for some reason. Cause I think that's still where his position is, or not Mrs. Heavy, but could be his, you know, Miz becomes his manager or something like that, or somebody becomes his manager, cause he's going to need some of that too. Yeah. But like, it doesn't seem like he's really, Monday is going to be really interesting if that match ends up happening between him and AJ Styles. So that's going to be super interesting to see where he's at in his development and if he could actually, you know, wrestle, because we haven't really seen him anything do much until now.
Yeah.
Dorian Gray, by the way.
Oh, okay. All right. I wouldn't have gotten that. Another comment on Liz promo here. Liz promo up until Becky came out was not good. Picked up a little in the back and forth. I kind of see Liv similar to Hangman Page. The win is far better than the title run. Is this scenario possible? Liv loses at day one. Close match, but loses clean. Becky attacks her after the match. Nothing horrific, but enough for Liv to be MIA until the Rumble. Have Liv come out for the Rumble. A number not too early, not too late. More energy and more attitude from Liv. She wins. Says she wants Becky. She and Becky tussle, leading to Becky having bodyguards. Liv wins at Mania. Could that build Liv up, or has that passed? I mean, that's a pretty specific layout, Javier, but, I mean, is there more to this, or are fans going to be like, are you kidding me? We got to sit through that much of that, you know, 4 months of Liv in a program with Becky? I don't think there's much you can do to make that work.
I don't think so. I mean, there is an off chance that Liv Morgan might win, just because with day one, I'm expecting to be some sort of surprises.
Yeah.
I think that could be a surprise, and then just Becky wins it right back. One of the WrestleMania matches I'm pretty sure of is going to be Bianca Belair and Becky Lynch at WrestleMania. So
I don't think they're going to leave out, you know, I don't know where Bayley fits in. I don't know if we end up with a triple threat, if she's back in time, but Sasha, Bayley, Charlotte, Becky, Bianca are the five who are going to occupy two of the top women's matches. And I don't think any of them, they're not going to feel good about bumping any of them from there. And maybe one of them on the SmackDown side, depending on where Bayley goes, ends up bumped. I guess Bayley could come back as a babyface on Raw and take on Becky. That would be fresh. And then Belair just does something else, but I don't know what that else would be. So yeah, I don't see Liv taking that spot. I think Liv is feuding with, you know, heel Doudrop or something instead and losing after this. I think this is Liv testing how far they can go with her. And I was for it, and I'm still for it. I don't regret it. I think you got to put people in positions to see if they can succeed against a veteran who can help them succeed if it's possible in Becky. But I think we're kind of getting our answer here. And it doesn't mean cut Liv. I just don't think Liv is top six, you know, female on the roster. She should be in that middle tier and very valuable in that spot until, you know, more women come along who are better than her, and then it's a tough call.
And who do you have better hopes for, Liv or Toni Storm?
At this point, Toni Storm. It changes week to week. It has changed week to week.
Show to show, probably.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, do you think it's close or not close? And whose side are you on that?
I've been very negative on the Toni Storm presentation.
Yeah.
Although I may be more wrong on that one than you know, because I think I've got a good handle on the Liv front. Like you said, that's probably going to wrestle up a feud with Piper Niven next, and then maybe Queen Zelina after that, and not you know, and then pretty much just be with Zelina and Carmella basically on that level.
Yeah.
You know, but Toni Storm is just, I just, that one promo that Sasha came in and essentially cut the promo for her just gave me some bad vibes that they're like, okay, we're just going to get through day one because we're already on the road to this and it's too late to switch to anything. So I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I'm not saying I'm hoping for this because I really like Toni Storm. I've followed her since even before the NXT UK. I think she has a lot of upside, but I don't know if it doesn't feel like they have faith in her from what I've seen thus far. This, you know, today's trip, we'll see what happens on Friday.
Yeah, I mean they're trying. Okay, final word from Ed here. By the way, the SmackDown highlight package with Roman and Brock makes it clear Brock should defeat Reigns and win the title. I'm not sure why he thought that because of the highlight package. Javier, do you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, was Brock winning?
Why the highlight package might make someone feel that way, or do you think it's just generically so?
No, I don't. As a matter of fact, let me segue to what that actually did make me think. What I was watching the highlight package, it actually gave me an out for the Heyman Reigns relationship.
Yeah.
Because if Heyman is still loyal to Roman Reigns. And, you know, he's you know, because he says, I'm protecting you from him. That's loyalty to Reigns. But Reigns is like, oh, you think I'm weaker. And then that's why he attacks him. And it could be possible that Heyman continues, you know, being loyal to Reigns, even though he's on the outside looking in, and still help him out, you know, without being, you know, within his inner circle. And I mean, so that I think eliminates it from it being a swerve. So he can still, you know, help Reigns win, but not in a swervy kind of way, more like in like, you know, I'm proving myself. I'm never, you know, it basically shows that I've always been loyal to you and, you know, and it's not like they were in cahoots. You know, that Reigns really did knock him out, but, you know, even this did not cause Heyman to lose faith. And I think that you get them back together and they continue together and it's a stronger, you know, there's no more doubt that Heyman is in the tribe, so to speak.
Does Reigns take on a demeanor where he's asking for Heyman's forgiveness and that changes the dynamic between them if Reigns was hasty and his, you know, his ego, his thin skin about what Heyman was implying? And does he admit he was right and Heyman was right along? Does that, I mean, does that have to happen for that to play out?
No, he'll just look at him and like, just give a slight nod. And then that's about all you get. I mean, that's,
gotcha.
That's, you know, or like, you know, like a tilt of the head and then like, you know, and Heyman just like overjoyed by.
fair enough. Yeah. By the way, Ed just closes with, thanks for all the content. The VIP podcasts are great and worth the investment. Happy holidays. Thank you, Ed. All right. We're running long here, which is we had a lot more to talk about than I anticipated coming into tonight, which is, you know, good. A couple key things we didn't talk about. One is Randy Orton beating Chad Gable and Otis going after Randy and kind of holding his own in a little exchange with him and setting up Randy versus Otis. What do you think about what they did? Where are you on Otis's push? Do you like this as a fresh opponent for Randy? Where does it go?
I found it hilarious in saying, he has no neck. How can he do the RKO? The one.
Totally. Yes.
You know. So,
well,
yeah.
No. Remember Jim Herd, the first executive vice president, went after Ted Turner bought WCW from.
I've heard that story.
And he wanted the Hunchbacks to be a tag team. And people are like, why? Visually? I'm making up the dialogue, whatever, dramatizing this. But in general, it was like, why? Why do you think hunchbacks would get over? He goes, oh, it's the greatest because they have hunchbacks. Their shoulders can never be pinned. And everyone was just like, oh, my God, who did Ted Turner hire? So, yeah, Otis has no neck, so you can't grip him with the RKO.
Yep. I mean, it's eventually going to lead to the tag team between those two teams. So.
Yeah. Well, but a singles match between them, I'm up for.
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to have an ending, but you know.
Yeah.
if there's one, some of them you can see that this is just not going to have an ending to this one.
I do want to complain in my list of things that other people just bake in and accept that I'm not willing to. I bake in and accept certain things about WWE. That other people and angers other people or you know, irks other people and vice versa. I do not like when somebody pushes a button to play music to interrupt someone who's about to reveal a very big thing. Like Omos was mistelling the truth or not. And he's about to speak. And then the person who runs the music decides to push a button at that moment. There's no heat on the Mysterios. There's no, like it just, again, came across as super scripted and overly produced, which is we're creating this artificial circumstance to create a cliffhanger because we don't want Omos to reveal his thoughts. And it was just – and they do too often in various ways. None of them are good, but this was, like, the worst because it wasn't a heel who has a dog in the fight going out, hey, you two, stop talking. Talk about me. Like, I can semi-live with that, but I don't love it. It's just something to make fun of a little bit. But this is awful. This is a babyface tag team with no interest in what was going on with Miz and Styles and Omos, and then they don't even control when their music starts. It's not like they wear microchips where it just automatically plays the music when they run through the tunnel. So I didn't just roll my eyes at it. I was irritated.
You know what they need to do? They need to actually put on social media them in gorilla position and the guy who hits the music saying, God, Miz just does not shut the hell up. Just go. And then just, you know, start it because he just wouldn't stop talking.
And I would like that attention to detail. I mean, even if it seems like more trouble than it's worth, they've got the budget and they should have more pride. And some of these loopholes should just make more sense. What do you think of Maurice's performance? Speaking of Miz a little bit there, you know, and because they gave I give them credit, and perhaps Adam Copeland just backstage is like, I'm not going to sit there and act like I'm buying into this. Everybody knows what's going to happen. Let me say I know what's going to happen. You can still do the same angle, but at least let me be aware and not be the dumb baby face who doesn't see it coming. Did that work for you, or did you ultimately agree with Corey Graves, who said it's even worse when you know it's a ruse and you still end up laid out flat on your face?
I mentioned that in my notes where it's like it's always about humiliating, and the fact because his actual words is like it's even more humiliating, and I'm like, could we just stop humiliating the baby faces, please? I mean, and in this case, it wasn't even, you know, like, you didn't even have to phrase it that way because, you know, because at that moment, it's like, okay, well, you know, he knew it was coming. He even stopped the attack from behind. I think it was a little bit too dumb to then turn his back on Maurice. And, I kind of hope that she opened her purse and she had a brick in there.
right, yeah.
That would have been awesome. Yeah. But, at that point, you know, I would have been like, okay, well, you know, he fought back, but it was a trap. 2-on-1, granted one of them was Maurice, but, you know, whatever, it was 2-on-1. And then, but then Corey Graves has to go out and yell, you know, it's even more humiliating. I know he's the heel too, but you know, it's like, oh my God, you know, so that turned me off. Although I did, I did find it hilarious that Jimmy Smith actually had to correct him, on something.
What was that?
During the tag team match where, KO saved a pin, Corey Graves goes on in this long thing that this is not going to happen then, you know, you're not going to be saving anybody. And then, you know, I think he might have realized what happened. He got silent, and then Smith said, well, no, it's a four-way. You are going to do that because if not, the other guy's going to win the match.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, Jimmy, good for you. Good for you.
You know what I would say? You know what I would say, Javier, to that?
Yeah.
That was a veteran announcer move by Jimmy Smith.
Yeah. Also
a veteran notes. Move.
Also my notes. I counted at least three cases of that.
Yes. I will say, and one of the things that bugged me the most about Jimmy Smith early was the false phony inflection of "you've got to be kidding me." Like, he just couldn't get it right. Like, it was like, "you've got to be kidding me." It's like, no, that's not like how anyone says it. "You've got to be kidding me." It's like, you never got it right. He got it right. It sounded like how someone would, the natural inflection of someone saying it without trying to do a grinding voice with weird inflection. And I think it was a move at ringside. It might have been in something with Otis. I'm not even sure. I can't remember where it was. But he was like, "you got to be kidding me." It was like, yes, that's how people say it. Yay. I just like almost want to jump up and applaud. Like, Jimmy Smith sounded natural instead of put on with some grinding announcer voice. The veteran move thing, especially when it's like two veterans with similar years in the ring, it's just like, stop it. Rookies know how to do a lot of these tricks of the trade.
Yeah, and this one is stupid things like put your knees up when the guy's coming down, or get out of the way with someone who's about to attack you. I could believe it when it's like you grab the ropes to break the count because you're saving your energy, and that's a veteran move. You know, that I could see you say that, but when all you did was get out of the guy's way so he could hit the turnbuckle, you're like, that's not a veteran move, man. That's just common sense.
Yeah. It's just a go-to phrase, and he does it too much. And whether he's being fed the line or not, it's not a good part of his announcing. Let's see. Anything else in your notes you want to bring up?
Randy Orton Gable. Yeah, at that point, there were three clean finishes. I think we ended up with more than that, which was, like, surprising. There's a Ripley and Zelina thing, but that seemed like it was just treading water into whatever they're going to do next.
Yeah, I just kind of scrolled past that and...
Yeah, and I did write that when Seth Rollins attacked Lashley from behind, that if you're going to sneak attack someone, do not wear an outfit you can see from orbit.
Yes, yep. Good tip.
I was surprised that they didn't play Flight of the Bumblebee as he was running, speaking of the microchip thing. Somebody's got to do that. Grab that video and have play Flight of the Bumblebee as Seth Rollins is beating up the people wearing that thing.
I do want to give a shout out to Liv's outfit. I think my this isn't a dig. Like, my great grandmother used to knit with yarn, and that would have been a really cool thing for her to create. That yarn based outfit. I thought that was kind of different and actually kind of cool.
And last praise for Jimmy Smith, he actually said coup de grace, and he overpronounced the S so that Corey stopped giving him a hard time.
I know. I was waiting for that to see if he would defy Corey Graves, because that's one of Corey Graves' things he's really proud of, is he knows that should be grace.
Yeah. I had to learn that the hard way, because since I played D&D, that word came up a lot, and I had been pronouncing it my entire life the wrong way. So.
Yeah. All right, cool. Javier, tell people about your social media, your contribution to the Torch, your holiday plans. This is your time.
I do the New Japan Pride podcast, which I'm going to be doing a preview soon for the Wrestle Kingdom, and it's getting late. The thing with the previews for the pay-per-views. The primers,
yeah.
There we go.
Primers, yeah.
Wow, yeah, we're getting tired. The primers for pay-per-views for WWE and AEW. I do, I'm on here in the on the post shows a lot in the post show things. And I'm just gonna stop talking now because I'm obviously like heading off a cliff like at 100 miles an hour, like if I were listening to the picks.
No problem, Javier. Thank you so much. Appreciate you. Jumping in here as co-host once again. It's fun to spend extended time with you, and it's less frustrating, I think, for you. So vicariously, I'm happy for you, because you're not listening for an hour, 20 minutes before we bring you on, scratching things off your notes, going, damn it, that's already covered. Can I add something to what they said? But I do miss bringing you on and having you go, here's something you didn't bring up, here's something I thought of. So there is a downside, because it's always great bringing you on late, but it's really fun having you on for the full stretch. So appreciate it.
And I enjoy being on because, when callers, ask questions, I like being able to, think on my feet and come up with, I don't have time to actually, you know, create a good question. I have to think more on my feet also. So it's always fun doing that. So.
Excellent. Well, happy holidays, Javier. Appreciate it. We will talk to you very soon.
Feliz Navidad y prospero año.
And happy holidays to all our listeners. Thank you. If you've listened this long and you like our show, please go give us a perfect rating on iTunes, on Apple Podcasts, and a nice review for what we do here that can help our search returns. And it just feels good. So for us, with all the work we put into the show, we appreciate that. And we'll just talk to you next time. Everybody be safe, be careful, and enjoy whatever you are doing over the next week or two for the holidays. And we will talk to you next time. In fact, I'll talk to you tomorrow on the flagship with Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Park. Send your questions right now to WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. We might fit it in on our flagship recording tomorrow, meaning Tuesday afternoon on our December 21st Tuesday flagship.